Bryan Stevenson's Just Mercy isn't just a book. It's a profound journey into America's broken criminal justice system. Growing up in a segregated community, I witnessed how Confederate flags weren't merely symbols, but boundaries marking where I wasn't welcome. These early experiences planted seeds that would later bloom into a lifelong mission for equality and justice. It wasn't until law school, however, that I truly began to understand the depth of injustice plaguing our system. Meeting Henry, a death row inmate who greeted me with unexpected kindness and spiritual hymns, shattered my preconceptions and ignited my commitment to represent the condemned. His humanity, preserved despite his circumstances, taught me that proximity to suffering reveals truths that statistics alone cannot convey. When we get close to marginalized communities, we discover not just their struggles, but our shared humanity. This proximity doesn't just change how we see others, it transforms how we see ourselves, revealing our own capacity for both brokenness and mercy. In Monroeville, Alabama, setting of To Kill a Mockingbird, Walter McMillian's case unfolded like a dark mirror of Harper Lee's fiction. A black man with no criminal history, Walter was sentenced to death row for a murder he didn't commit. Judge Robert E. Lee Key's evasiveness about the case revealed the biases within the local judiciary. After months of failed investigation into Rhonda Morrison's murder, Walter, already controversial for dating a white woman, became the perfect scapegoat. The case against Walter was built on absurd evidence, primarily the testimony of Ralph Myers, a man who had never met him. When I met Walter on death row, he maintained his innocence with unwavering conviction. "I wasn't anywhere near that store when that girl was killed," he told me, his eyes holding mine with unmistakable truth. The racial undertones were unmistakable. Walter's real transgression seemed to be his interracial relationship in a community still haunted by segregation. His case exposed how justice in America remained far from colorblind, even with overwhelming evidence of innocence. The early days of my legal career began on Steve Bright's couch as I started criminal defense work in Georgia. Another Harvard Law graduate and I established a project representing Alabama's death row inmates from our modest shared apartment. Southern prison visits revealed horrific conditions, tiny solitary cells, systematic abuse, and dehumanization reminiscent of the Attica riots. I took on cases involving suspicious jail deaths and police shootings, driven by the stark reality of how circumstance shapes freedom. The work was exhausting, but essential. One night, while sitting in my parked car listening to music, I found myself surrounded by police officers with drawn guns, mistaking me for a suspect. That moment of terror, where my life hung on a misunderstanding, crystallized why this work mattered. Such encounters were daily possibilities for many communities. The incident proved that even a Harvard degree couldn't protect me from the same biases facing my clients. It strengthened my commitment to challenge a system that confused punishment with justice, showing that reform requires confronting both legal precedents and deep-rooted societal prejudices. Walter McMillian's trial epitomized injustice. Despite a 40% black county population, prosecutors eliminated every African American from the jury pool and moved the trial to predominantly white Baldwin County. The prosecution's case hinged solely on Ralph Myers' coerced testimony, which was later proven fabricated under law enforcement pressure. They ignored over a dozen witnesses who confirmed Walter was hosting a fish fry miles from the crime scene when the murder occurred. "I couldn't believe they were doing this," Walter told me. "I had over a dozen witnesses who were with me at my home when they claimed I was committing this murder." Though the jury recommended life imprisonment, the judge overrode it for a death sentence. This wasn't merely a failure of evidence, but of humanity, sacrificing an innocent man rather than confronting uncomfortable truths about race and justice in America. In February 1989, we established our nonprofit law center in Tuscaloosa for death row inmates. After losing support, we relocated to Montgomery and founded the Equal Justice Initiative, immediately taking on urgent cases. Execution dates mounted for clients like Walter, while the Supreme Court's evolving death penalty stance intensified the need for representation. Michael Lindsay's case highlighted judicial override, where judges could impose death against jury recommendations for life. As elections approached, judges increasingly used these overrides as campaign tools, with 89% resulting in death sentences contrary to jury wishes. Herbert Richardson's case was particularly tragic. A Vietnam veteran with PTSD, his misguided smoke bomb attempt to win back an ex-girlfriend turned fatal. Despite his mental illness and lack of lethal intent, poor legal defense led to his death sentence. In his final hours, Herbert's singing of the old rugged cross echoed through the prison. His execution reinforced my commitment to defendants like Walter, revealing how easily the system could discard even a traumatized veteran who never intended to kill. Monroeville's response to Walter's case exposed racial divisions that contrasted sharply with the town's celebration of Harper Lee's novel. While tourists flocked to experience the fictional story, a real injustice unfolded with minimal public outcry. Meeting Walter's family transformed this from a legal case into a personal mission. In their small trailer, his sister Armelia spoke with conviction. "My brother was with us all day when they say this murder happened. We were all together right here having a fish fry. How can they say he did this when all of us saw him right here?" His wife Minnie and daughter Jackie described their struggle since his conviction. The whispers, lost income, and brief visiting days. Yet their belief in Walter's innocence never wavered. The McMillians were supported by a network of neighbors, church members, and friends who confirmed his alibi and questioned his conviction. The family situation exemplified both the pain of systemic injustice and the power of community solidarity. Their story reinforced that this case transcended legal arguments. It was about restoring humanity to a broken system. Despite evidence of police misconduct and Meyer's recantation, the system resisted acknowledging Walter's innocence, fearing damage to public trust. A 60 Minutes broadcast exposing the case's flaws helped shift public opinion, despite initial local media resistance. The Alabama Court of Criminal Appeals finally reversed Walter's conviction, citing perjured testimony and suppressed evidence. After 6 years on death row, Walter was freed, greeting me with the poignant words, "Thank you for saving my life." Walter passed away in 2013 after battling dementia. His legacy stands as a powerful testament to both human resilience and the urgent need for criminal justice reform.